Good morning. Welcome. Thank you for coming to this celebration. All of the friends from show business, all the friends from the church, all the friends from the Silver Spoon. I knew you'd be here. And the friends from Tai Chi, they're all here, yes. And a family member representing the whole family is here from Chicago, Michael Vance. Thank you for coming. We're all here to celebrate our dear friend. I'm leaving this picture out for us, the people that are speaking. Just this one, where he's smiling and laughing. Because whenever you'd ask John, how are you feeling? He always had one answer. I'm chipper. And so I think we should try to be as chipper as we possibly can during these proceedings. And I think he would like it that way. My name's Jim Evering. I'm a practitioner here at the church. And John was a founding member of this church. Actually, it's a center now, but it was a church then. And the first time I saw him was at the Scottish Rite Temple. He was on the stage talking about what science of mind meant to him. And he talked about his grandmother, the wicked Srega, the witch, who made curses and hexes on people, and they all believed it. So they worked. And so he was relating that to science of mind and thoughts and beliefs that we hold on, we experience. John was a multi-talented person. He was an excellent actor. He wrote a glorious play about his life, about his family. He was an exceptional teacher of acting. I went to one of his classes. It was excellent. And he was a great cook. Yes, sausage and peppers, eggplant parmesan, chicken cacciatore. It never ended. But I think the most important thing for me, his biggest talent, was that he was so damn funny. He made me laugh. His mind was like nobody else's. When I first knew him, he had this habit of sprinkling song lyrics into his conversation. For example, if you said, hey, John, how's it going? What's happening? What's new? He'd say, there's a bright golden haze on the meadow. If it was raining, he'd go into the Silver Spoon, shake off his umbrella, and say, the weather outside is frightful. And once at the SAG screening, it was just about the movie, it was just about to start, and suddenly, down the aisle walks this person in a clown suit. He's got all the things all over his face, the big shoes, and he's walking, looking for a seat, walks all the way down the aisle. Everybody's watching him. Finally, he finds a spot. He sits down, and in the silence, John said, don't bother, they're here. John once wrote a perfect slogan for Gelson's Market. Why pay less? John, he loved to engage with people, with anybody, with strangers. He would tell a joke to a cashier. He would tell the waitress in the Chinese restaurant he wanted meatballs and spaghetti. In the doctor's office, he asked for a margarita. And they would all start playing with him. He always said, I like to play with people. And they like to play back. So that every time I didn't expect this. Every time that they came, you know, he came in, people would light up because they were really happy to see him. He changed their world. Now, if you ever were in a group with a John, you'd recognize that he'd be silent for a long time, and people would be talking, and then he'd find an opening, and he'd come out with a zinger. I remember one time, I think he was at the Silver Spoon, when this guy had decided to come out of the closet, and he was saying how happy he was and how free he was, and he just couldn't shut up about it. Finally, he said to John, "Tell me, did you know I was gay?" And John said, "My cat knew you were gay." He was at a dinner party one time, dinner party with people that he didn't really know, and they were a very high-powered group, and they were talking about what they were doing, what important people they knew, and they kept topping one another about how wonderful they were. And John, of course, is sitting there silently. Finally, some lady said, "And John, what do you do?" And John said, "Well, every night I put on my mask and cape and go out into the city to fight crime." Got a scream. He got a scream. And somebody who was at that dinner was our first speaker, Dina Dietrich. So please come up here, Dina. You're the oldest and dearest friend. You can just come right over here. I got a mic for you. I got a mic right here. Does this work for you? You can do it. It's going to happen. Yes? Oh, wait a minute. Not yet. Oh, here we are. Yes, his oldest and dearest friend. I underline oldest, but it's not nice to fool Dina Dietrich.
Thank you both very much. Thank you. What an entrance. Yeah. And I didn't even try. Hi. My name is Dina Dietrich, and John and I knew each other for approximately 62 years. We met first in New York, lost track of each other when we moved out here. And then, thanks to Freddie Weber and a couple other people, we reunited and had a wonderful time over the next 62 years, which John got cut a little short. I wanted to say, I'm not used to a mic anymore, sorry. I wanted to say something about this wonderful program and the things that I suspect Jim had a lot to say about. Jim had a lot to say about everything. He's the funniest man. You don't expect him to be funny, but he's got a great sense of timing, which John appreciated. I want to tell you a story. Oh, thank you, young man. Would you take it?
Yes.
I think so, yeah, thanks. Everybody, you can hear me? I'm not used to mics these days. I'm in semi-retirement. I'll let you figure out what the semi is. There's a story in here that leaves a little out, and I want to tell that story. In 62, which I think is the year we met, I was working in a little grimy, grubby theater down on Second Avenue called the Gate Theater. Any of you who ever worked there know I'm not kidding. It was grubby and gritty, and it was a stage, and that's all we cared about. So we were doing this musical, and the woman who owned the theater, for some reason I've never forgotten her name, Lily Turner, had hired John to clean up around the place because it was a dirty theater. And so he would come in early evening before rehearsals, whenever he was needed, and he would clean everything up. And he didn't really care much what he looked like when he's over there doing that. So one night, we're getting ready to go. I'm even thinking, I hope I'm not embellishing this, I think it was opening night. Thank you. Opening night at the Gate Theater. Wow. Anyway, the fire marshal didn't show up. And Lily was hysterical. And she said, somebody's got to do the talk. Somebody's got to do the talk. She said, John, will you do the talk? And John said, should I? And here he had on old baggy pants, bedroom slippers. His sleeves were too short, and his pant legs were too short, because he was a very tall man. And he didn't bother to clean up when he went to do the cleaning over at the Gate Theater. So he said, I can't, look at me, look at me, I can't do it. She said, you have to do it. They won't let us open. It's the fire marshal. So he said, okay. So he borrowed a jacket from somebody that almost fit him, pulled his pants down, and was getting ready to go out on the Gate Theater stage when he drew a blank. Anybody in the theater knows that this happens to all of us one time or another. So he had to stand there for a few minutes, and Lily kept saying, get out there, get out there. Be the fire marshal. So he was finally so rattled that he went out on the stage. And you know how tall John was. He was like scared. His first time on a stage. And he stood there for a minute and looked around. And then he said, don't smoke! Those of you that never heard that story, it's my favorite. And he added a little bit to that. He always liked to add a joke or keep it going. So sometimes when he told that story, he would add this little bit, which makes me laugh. He went to the phone rings. Are you all trembling with anticipation? The phone rings, and Lily Turner says, Who is that? Who do you want? The fire marshal? She said, John, come to the phone. He came to the phone, and this voice said, Mr. Miranda, we'd like you to audition for Oliver. Can you be at the theater tomorrow at 2 o'clock? John said, sure, 2 o'clock. The next day, he arrives at the theater, and there's this long line of actors. He thought he was the only one. He wasn't familiar enough with our theater to know there would be a long line. So he got in the line, and he motioned to the stage manager, who was taking care of all the auditions, letting everyone in, showing them out. And the man was absolutely a mess. He was shaking all over when he held the papers. The papers shook, and he was giving wrong names. He was doing everything wrong. And John said, take it easy. It's just an audition. So the line got shorter and shorter, and finally John gets up to where he's going to go out on the stage, and the stage manager was a wreck, shaking and everything. I've seen them like that. They really are. They're afraid to make a mistake. So he said to John, "You're next. You're next. John Miranda. John Miranda. You're next. All right, John. Ladies and gentlemen, Johnny Belinda." This was a pretty famous movie that was out at that time. And the girl in it, as I recall, was deaf and had to use sign language. So John goes out on stage. To silence. He shrugged his shoulders and said, "I did my part." That's one of my stories from 62 years. Thank you all for coming.
Just to make it clear, he did get the job on that day. They didn't know. You have to tell them. But that's what I'm here for, to help explain everything. I'm going to tell you one thing about John. One time, he was the victim of identity theft. He was having a lot of trouble with it, and he gets a call from the credit card company, and they said, "You owe $13,000 for this Toyota truck that you bought in Ohio." He said, "I don't need a truck, and I haven't been to Ohio for years." He said, "Well, it was purchased by your wife, Yolanda." And he said, "Are you crazy? Do you think I'd marry a woman named Yolanda Miranda?" Only his mind. Now, we have another friend from the old days. An actress that he worked with, the lovely Barbara Worthington. Could you come up? You can come up here, or you can go down there. Come on up.
Hello. Thanks for coming out. Thanks for coming out to honor my friend. The year was 1976. The place was Kenley Players. I still have the t-shirt. Been there, had the t-shirt, and the show was Shenandoah. It had a remarkable cast of characters, and in that remarkable cast of characters, Ed Ames was our leader. And John Miranda played the Reverend Bird with the strangest New York Southern accent you've ever heard in your life. And what happened after that was this very unlikely friendship that lasted almost 40 years. After we did the show, well, no, actually, I want to tell you this a great story about the show. He made me laugh so hard. He was so funny, and he would come into my dressing room in between, and he'd get me very distracted. He'd be telling me some bad joke or some silly story, and we were laughing. So one night, we're in the dressing room. I'm sitting there howling. I have my costume on from the previous scene. And he's making me laugh. All of a sudden, over the PA system, I hear Ed. And Ed's singing, "Papa's gonna make it all right, babe." And I thought, oh, shit. That's my song. Ed Ames is singing my song. I should be out there. He's supposed to be in the light. So, and I did my costume on. Listen, tore my costume off. I said, John, get my dress. And those dresses were wool and heavy. It was period piece and no Velcro on the back. It had a zipper up the back. I said, get that zipper up, get that zipper up. I had no clothes on, except I had this dress on. He couldn't get the zipper on. I said, what am I going to do? And he said, you're just going to make your way into the light. Just make your way into. So I've got this dress on, and it's not zipped up the back, and it's big and heavy, and I'm like this. And I'm like, good into the light, and just sliding my way into the light till I finally get in the light. Ed sees me. We sing a little duet, and then he drops out, and I finish the song. And then I had to slide back in the stage, and I turn around to Ed, and I'm buck naked here in the back all the way down. John Miranda covered my ass. John Miranda covered my ass for almost 40 years. And I want to talk about that man who made me laugh, who was a part of my family, who watched my daughter grow, and who shared birthdays and holidays and Christmases. Oh, so many Christmases. And that man was my friend. And I could call him any hour of the day or night, whatever it was. I could call him with any request, any need, any problem, or just to say hi. And he always was there for me. That's the measure of the man. We talk about how much he made us laugh. But when he was your friend, when he adopted you, when you were a part of his life, it meant something big. And he was the person who introduced me to Science of Mind. Science of Mind changed my life. Therefore, Johnny changed my life. And who knew? We don't know when some moment, something big will happen and change. And so, therefore, I mourn, and I mourn the loss of my friend. I miss him terribly. But he wasn't able to make jokes. He wasn't able to move. He wasn't able to go have coffee at the Silver Spoon. And so while I'm mourning him, that's my sadness and my selfishness. What I really hear in my head is, make a joyful noise unto the Lord. Make a joyful noise unto the Lord. Because our friend was so wonderful. We were so lucky to know him. And I'm just going to keep on making a joyful noise about John Miranda. Thanks a lot.
You know, John had a habit of loving to get someplace and loving to get out of it. Just loved to rush. One time after a play, friends asked him out for dinner, for a drink after the show, and he said, I'd love to, but I don't want to. Is that perfect? Is that a perfect thing to say? I want to bring a more recent friend from our Tai Chi group. Our Tai Chi people are right here. Where's Rudy? Oh, come on up, Rudy. He's a wonderful writer who works with the likes of Mel Brooks and Barry Levinson and me, way at the back. And here he is, Rudy DeLuca.
Thank you, Jim. I knew John from our Tai Chi group that sit in the front. And John had a positive side of him and a negative side of him, as we all know. positive side, he'd come into Tai Chi, and I would be sitting there waiting. And he'd sit down and go, can't breathe. And, but it's a nice day, isn't it? And I used to look at him and say, geez, John, what are you? Look at how big you are, 6'3". I said, how'd you get to be 6'3"? He says, my mother was this big, my father was this big, and I grew up to be 6'3". I'm not sure about the postman was 6 feet, the tailor was 6 feet, but somewhere along the line, he managed. And then we had a time when Louise and our group died. She was 99 years old. And this woman got up at the memorial and started to carry on and carry on. And you don't carry on too much with John. She was going, and I knew Louise. And she was this, we flooded through the walked in the forest and the trees. And we used to walk, and John's sitting there like this, and everyone falls, and we had a good time with Louise. And we're here, next! And then another time, we had this mentally challenged guy called David. Used to sit on our, after Tai Chi, sitting on our group. And he was like, you know, he talked like a mentally challenged. Hello, Rudy. Hello, this. And he used to tell some stories. And we'd sitting around, and John would go on his breath, savant, savant, savant. I'd say, John, the guy is, after we met, the guy's, you know, he's not like you and me. He says, I know. So why is he talking? And then he always used to say to me, let's talk about now. You're always talking about the past and old and that. Let's talk about now, now. Okay. I said, ISIS, the Taliban, Al-Qaeda. He said, all right, talk about the past. So John was a great guy to me anyway. I mean, we loved him for what he was. And our Tai Chi people, we're all going to miss him. He didn't do Tai Chi so well. He used to do like this, you know, and just do the motions. He couldn't wait to finish Tai Chi and have coffee. But wherever he is, John, we're going to miss you. Tai Chi people are going to miss him, and me especially. And that's it. We'll miss him.
Thank you, Rudy. Recently in the Tai Chi, he got a little nostalgic, and he said, you know, looking back, I've had a lot of sex in my life, sometimes with other people. That was John. Now we're going to have Carol. Carol Lefko, you ready? Come on up. This is a casting director that John worked with and was a dear friend for many, many years. Please welcome Carol Lefko.
Everyone, you have to excuse, I'm not an actor. So I've known Johnny for, let's see, I knew him over 20 years. I was so fortunate. And he was a longtime great friend of mine. And he was many things. He was a phenomenal human being, a hilarious jokester. And he was a brilliant writer. He wrote this fabulous play called Italian Funerals and Other Festive Occasions. And I was fortunate enough to be his casting director. You know, Johnny put his heart into his writing. This play was all about Johnny's Italian family. It was about love and opera, food, the mob, frictions, celebrations, and death. It was all just beautifully told in this play. One of the funny stories that he told, where did Jim go? Oh, Jim mentioned his grandmother. Oh my God. He tells crazy stories about his grandmother. But one of the funny stories about his grandmother in the play, she wore black every day, and she was forever in mourning. And after she died, Johnny's family didn't have money for a funeral parlor, so they decided to put her on view in the parlor of their own home. So for several days and each morning, a very impressionable Johnny had to walk past his grandmother to get his cornflakes. Who knows what that did? So Italian funerals and other festive occasions was a huge success when it opened in Philadelphia. It's been published. Johnny's play is available at Samuel French bookstores and online. It's been produced and is all across the U.S., high schools, colleges, universities, community theaters, all kinds of places put on Johnny's Italian funerals and other festive occasions. One of my favorite memories is that Johnny and I would go to Samuel French bookstore, and he'd see there was maybe a copy, a few copies of his play sitting there on the bookshelf. And he would be so excited to go up to the clerk and say, "Young man or young woman, you need to order more plays." This was Johnny's loving and lasting tribute to his Italian family. And he was just this extraordinary man. He was beautiful. He had a kind heart. He was so generous. He was generous beyond what he should have been so generous. He was nice to everyone. You were so right. Anybody who he met, he was so nice to. He made everyone feel so important, and mostly the people in his life. And I'm going to miss my friend Johnny, and I'm going to think about him every day. Next.
There's a story I shouldn't tell, but I can't help it. It's so funny. When John's friend Frank Eccles died, he got a call, and the guy said he wanted to talk to the executor of the estate, and John said, "That's me." So the guy said, "My name is Richard from this some kind of company, and I read in Variety that he passed away, and he owes our company $6,000. So John said, "Really?" He said, "Where is your company?" He said, "Maybe I should send a check." The guy said, "Well, you know, don't bother about sending it to us. You can just send it to our post office box." He said, "Post office box, I see." And he said, "Richard, could you hold on a minute?" And he puts down the phone and he says, "Om, om, om." And he picks up the phone again. He says, "Richard." The guy said, "Yes." He said, "I just channeled Frank, and he told me to tell you to go fuck yourself." He hung up. For a kinder and gentler memory, we'll hear from Melissa, dear friend of his, Melissa Detweiler. She's going to cry for us. No, I know, darling. I know. Come on up here. I know how you love him.
Okay, I'm not going to get through this. I'm already a wreck. First of all, we need to get together more than just for funerals and weddings. I've seen faces in here I haven't seen forever. I just love you. Dina, I love you. Woo! Okay, I met John when Frank and Dina and I did a play at the Colony Theater over in Silver Lake. And the play was called Done to Death. And let me just say, it was done to death. I was 24 years old. which was only like a couple years ago, so I really shouldn't be speaking. I didn't know him that well. Seriously, the three of them, John, Frank, and Dina, they adopted me, and they took me under their wing, and I'll never forget that. And John was like a grandfather to me and a father to me. I'm sorry. John and Frank, they would have me over for dinner and help me with my life's problems, which were many, but it was a reoccurring theme. Men, my non-acting career, men, my non-acting career, men, and more men, which I think they got a kick out of that. John would buy me classes at the Science of Mind in hopes that I would find my way. My way took me and him, not to just church classes. I had many paths, and John went along for all my crazy rides and all my stories. And I think Frank made him promise to look out for me, which I think it was more than what John bargained for at times. I did take him on his first limo ride to Laguna Beach for his 75th birthday, and he had such a good time. I couldn't believe that he'd never been in a limo. He had to keep my crazy southern aunt from hitting on him constantly, and I can't remember what one-liner zingers that he had at the moment, but he just kept looking at me and laughing, and I would just giggle. I mean, it was just comical. I was happy to be able to give something back to him. He gave me so much unconditional love and friendship. I can't say I have it together today, but I am a much, much better person for having John in my life. I saw him a few days before he left us, and I asked him to walk me down the aisle for my wedding. He was so excited and happy. He started counting the months before the wedding date. Oh, man. I left that day with a heavy heart because I knew he would not be there. But now I take that back. He will be there, right next to me, standing tall and proud. And Frank, no doubt, will be on my other side, or he'll be at the buffet line or trying to get some white wine. John used to joke saying I was the only one that really loved Frank. I thank you, John, for every moment and memory you gave to me, and you will always be in my heart. Thank you.
You did great. Now, she talked about the generosity that John had and how he gave to so many people. We're hoping to have some time for other people, but it's really moving fast. We don't have the theater for that long. One more person. Catherine, I know you wanted to, but please be mindful of the time, because we are in a rush, and you don't want to hear John from the back calling, "Next!"
Hi, I'm Catherine Clinch, and I met Giovanni, and he will always be Giovanni to me, because John was too ordinary for who he was. He was an extraordinary human being. And so Giovanni was doing a jigsaw puzzle, and as he started talking to me and telling me about his family, this incredible narrative just kept spilling out with every word, and I said, "Are you writing this as a novel or short stories?" He said, "Oh, no, 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 I'm not a writer. I could never write." And I said, "You're a writer. It's innate in you. You must write." And he said, "No, no, no. I'm just an actor." So we had that fight for about 15 years. And when he finally wrote, he was remarkably successful. But he still maintained he was just an actor who sort of wrote. To my family, he will always be Uncle Giovanni, my son's godfather. To his friends, because Giovanni grew up in the Depression, and he always kind of felt that he didn't deserve as much because he grew up in such poverty, that he was always there for other people. When a friend needed a colonoscopy that he couldn't afford, Giovanni paid for it. When our son needed extreme braces because of multiple disabilities, Giovanni knew we couldn't afford it, so he paid for it. He was always there for everyone, and with himself, he was so pinch-penny because he never quite just felt that he deserved it. I am so grateful to his niece, Michael, for making him travel the world with her. Because when he talks about the highlight of his life, it was standing in Africa, seeing the animals and nature. We were all so remarkably blessed to have this man in our life. And I don't know that of the many thousands of people we'll meet, we will ever have anyone as remarkable as Giovanni. So I thank you for sharing all those experiences with me and with him, because I think I heard about every single one of you. And I thank you for sharing my love of this remarkable man. Thank you.
And now we have some special music with one of John's favorite singers being accompanied by one of John's favorite pianists. Come on up here. You can make it. Please welcome Kelly Britt and Paul Horner.
Thank you, Jim. Well, Christmas. John loved Christmas. I mean, to the extent I can remember, New Year's Day, he would start counting the days for next Christmas. There was one time, I know there was a 4th of July celebration, and it was on a weekend. So I said to John afterward, I said, "Did you have a good time for the holiday?" And he went, "No." "Did I do him right?" "No." "Oh, I'm sorry, John, about this." He says, "No, not to worry. Pretty soon." And I said, "Pretty soon? What do you mean, John?" He said, "Pretty soon. 5 months and 20 days, and it'll be Christmas." So I'm happy. What a beautiful man. And I'm so blessed to have been his friend. And this is in honor of him, of course, as you know now what the Christmas week is. But certainly, I have to thank him so much for how I feel about him, because he was a precious guy. But he used to say, I know one time I sang for church, and he came back and he said, "Why don't you sing a Christmas song?" Right, it would be Thanksgiving or Father's Day or something. He said, "You gotta sing a Christmas song." So I'm gonna do that, John. "Have yourself a merry little Christmas. Let your heart be light. Next year, all our troubles will be out of sight. Have yourself a merry little Christmas. Make the Yuletide gay. Next year, all our troubles will be miles away. Golden days of yore. Faithful friends who are dear to us will be near to us once more. Through the years, we all will be together. If the fates allow, until then, we'll have to muddle out somehow. So have yourself a merry little Christmas. God bless you, John.
Sounded good. Thank you, Kelly and Paul. My name's John McLean, and I get to be here every Sunday, as it's my joyful responsibility to be the minister here. Jim, thank you for being such an elegant moderator, host of this affair. As a public figure and speaker, I do live in fear of dropping the F-bomb. So thank you for making this a safe space, should that ever happen for me. Yeah. The way we church now, it's different than it used to be. Hi, Dina. Hi, Michael. Thanks for coming all the way out here. It's great to see you. See you both, Freddie. I was a founding member of this ministry when I was a civilian 26 years ago, and I was afraid of everybody. That was one of my things. And John was the first person, other than Cooper, who always gave me a warm welcome at the door. John was the first person that I remember speaking to, and he was always a darling and a good friend to me. And a constant presence in this ministry as well. He was a good supporter in every possible way, meaning he was of service for decades, and that kind of dedication is rare. So I will miss him in many ways for many reasons. But, you know, when I had the privilege of being invited here almost 5 years ago, there were you know, things were done the way they're done, and I'm the kind of a guy that I like to change things on a fairly regular basis. Not a monthly basis, but every year or so, do something very different. And I do keep mixing it up. One of the lovely things that we don't do anymore, but it was a really lovely part of the service that had gone on for many years, was a blessing of some kind that got congregants up on their feet and on the podium here so they could express a gratitude for something that was going on in their world. And I will confess that after I had been here for about a year and a half, I began to think, well, it's probably time to retire that activity and take a few years off and then come up with something else, another way for people to express themselves. And you wonder when the right time to retire an activity might be. And that time came when right after John had been to Africa with Michael. And, you know, he was a chronic kidder. He was chronically facetious. Even up till about a week before he passed, he was in the hospital with wires all over the place and an oxygen mask. And the nurse said, is it okay if I tell this guy what's going on with your condition? And he said, him? No, absolutely not. Anybody else but him. And I said, this is not the time for irony. But he was unusually earnest that morning when he was going to do a blessing. And he said that he had just been on this trip with Michael and that he had seen something that he never saw before. And the way he shared the experience about being in Africa with you made me know that this man had a true spiritual awakening. That whatever it was that happened there, whatever experience it was, whatever he saw the face of God and he knew that he knew it. And I also knew that it is never going to be more important. There's never going to be a share that's going to be more important than that one. And that was the time to retire that activity. But what is such a blessing for us in our teaching is that we continue at this growing edge to invite us all, and here it is in Africa, whatever it was that happened, that he had an experience, he had some ecstatic opening to the unity of all life. It can happen anytime for any one of us. And I am so grateful that I knew him long enough and I actually got to see the moment when he turned the corner and he really knew about the omnipresence of spirit in the world that we live in. Bunny is here somewhere. Bunny, come on up before, I'd like to treat now, but it has been our tradition, not lately, but on occasions, on an Italian funeral and a festive occasion such as today, I think we should conclude with the peace song. But before we do this, I would invite everybody into a moment of prayer, yes? And so whatever that is for you, know that we share the same understanding. No matter what faith tradition you are belong to or come from, or if you are a non-believer, we know that there is a creative principle. There is some creative principle that creates the world that we live in and sustains it in an orderly fashion, and it allows it to keep expanding at the speed of light in every direction in the dimensions that we know not of. But that this creative principle is the thing itself. It is somehow a ground of being that all of the material world comes from and is eventually recycled. And yet spirit is never consumed by it. There is that of this principle that is awareness, that is intelligence, and that is consciousness. And that part of John Miranda that we know as John Miranda continues to be enfolded in love and will continue to unfold in grace, as is the good orderly progression of the universe itself. John Miranda is given to the care of the intelligence and the loving presence, and all shall be well, and all manner of things shall be well. Vaya con Dios. So it is. If you can, if not, but if you can stand, let's stand and grab a hand, and we can sing the. Can do you know it off the top of your head, Paul? Do you remember it? You've got the body memory. How nice to see Paul Horner, too. There is a lovely reception with Jim and John's friends have put together, and we invite everyone downstairs right after this service. In the key of love? Yes.
Meant to be with God. begin with me. Let this be the moment now. With every step I take, let this be my solemn vow. To take each moment and live each moment in peace eternally. Let there be peace on earth, and let it begin with me.
Love you, John.